kind of see what's been going on. G. Bush has been out here every day. Coach Riz has been out here every day. It's my first time being out here this season. Not much has changed from what it typically is, though, guys. Like, I'm typically just in the corner doing the radio crew. What's nice is that in years past, the beat writers and beat reporters, there's been times where they were stationed right in front of us.
Yeah,
so I kind of felt like I was like doing a show for them at times. That's never fun. That's it, because like you'd watch, and we used to saw this with our old boss Andy Roth. He would do this too. So Coach Riz, he would like I'd be saying something, and they would all kind of like either nod their head in agreement or like shake their head of being like, no, that's not right. We don't like this take. And like you see them all collectively, like they're bobbleheads. Like they're all just like, oh yeah, that's a good one right there. Or like they'd smile or laugh at a joke, or you'd like go for a joke and it wouldn't land, and you'd see them all just kind of not laugh, and you're like, this was the funny part. What happened here? This is the funny part. So I like that you guys are very, very far away. But Coach Riz, very important day today. First off, thanks for being here. We appreciate you. And,
Absolutely, thanks for having me.
By the way, I want to preview, you're going to be with me. So this is interesting that G. Bush is here, by the way. G. Bush and I did the pregame shows together for how many years, G. Bush? Like 8 years?
Yeah, it was like crazy.
For a very long time, right up until kickoff, it was me and G. Bush starting at like 9 in the morning or something and then going all the way on E6 and then doing all these different shows and everything. Coach Riz is going to be playing the role of G. Bush this year with myself.
Oh, so like, listen, this is like when you like break up and then like you see him with the next person.
We broke up with you and now we're getting together with Coach Riz.
They're like, yeah.
And we're unveiling this right in front of your very eyes.
It's a tough follow for me. It's a tough follow right in front of me.
Maybe because it's 2025 and maybe it's because we're progressive. You always have an open invitation to come join us though. At any point that you want to, we'll let it be known. You can come join us for a pregame.
That turned into...
You left us. We didn't leave you. You left us.
This turned real swingerish real quick.
That's what... It's progressive. It's 2025. It is what it is.
Just all together.
We don't kink shame around here, guys. You're into what you're into, okay?
To each his own.
You probably thought you never...
Coach Riz is like, what did I walk into?
I thought I was going to
break down MJ Emerson, and now we're doing this.
But, you know.
All right, so what did happen with MJ Emerson today? We saw him rolling out there with the cart. He had the towel over his eyes, and just from a distance as I'm doing the show, we could tell it was awful. And then you see more of the video. You were right there, though, front row seat. Take us through what happened.
Well, the thing that really hurts is how good he's been coming into camp. Mm-hmm. You know, he didn't have a great year last year, but he works so hard. Every year I've watched him, he's such a hard worker and works on his craft. So he's been really good so far since camp started. Actually, the play went to Fannin. So I was focused on Fannin, and I kind of turned. It was almost like a non-contact, and then he went down and he grabbed the knee. And in my years of, unfortunately, being a coach and, you know, being around football, you see those knee injuries. I will say this. It's like not losing a game before you play it. The knees are so weird. Sometimes they look terrible and you're okay, and sometimes they look like nothing happens. It's an ACL.
Yeah.
It just didn't look good the way it was laying there. It didn't look good the way the trainers reacted.
I mean, he's crying.
Yeah, it didn't
look... People are kneeling down and praying. He's in tears. Like, it's just...
And when you grab the back of the knee, that's usually a sign, not a good sign. I'm hoping for the best, not only for the Browns, but him as a person.
Was it like Kevin Durant against the Rockets, where he just instantly feels like it looks like he got shot, or does it seem like something else?
Those non-contact things are weird because as a player, you don't know what happened because you didn't hit anybody. Nothing happened, and it's a lower leg. So anytime you get a knee injury, is it the knee? Is it the Achilles? Sometimes it's hard to tell. But you can always tell by a player's eyes what has actually happened. So I'm hoping for the best. It didn't look good. Just like I said, the way his left leg was kind of laying there, it didn't look deformed or anything like that. So that tells me it's more of a knee. It just grabbed the back of that knee, and he didn't have a lot of movement. And the way they put him on the cart, pretty concerning.
Yeah, it's I've had two ACL surgeries. I've tore my PCL, so I've had like 17 surgeries. So I've had some that's contact and some that's non-contact. When you get the non-contact, it's kind of you just know it. Mm-hmm. Like you kind of move and you kind of look around, and it's just that sinking part in your stomach. And the emotion comes from the work you put in just to get here. If you get hurt during a game, you're like, okay, cool. At least I made it to the game, and that's what we work for. But you get hurt, and you ain't put the pads on, or you get hurt in a practice setting, because I tore my ACL in a practice before playing University of Pittsburgh, and it was just tough because you kind of know in your heart of hearts what it is. You're just waiting for that signal. So hopefully, Martin, because it's contract year for him. So, when you take a look at what he looked like so far, I thought the defense has been ahead of the offense so far. And if the Browns are going to overachieve, they were leaning on those defensive guys to make those plays.
Well, you know, and I couldn't agree more because, you know, to be successful, they got to win on first down. And that's going to start with that defensive line. And then you get the second, third, long. Now you're turning those pass rushers loose. And then you have those good corners that can cover. So you can bring more pressure if you need it. And Martin Emerson, like I said, since he's gotten here, I enjoy watching him practice. He steps up against every good player. He's always first in line. He works at his craft. And I think you said it best. I've had a number of injuries where sometimes you're not sure. And then other times you just know it's not right.
And yeah, and usually when they're in tears, that's kind of like the big giveaway that something's not great.
Yeah, just something – it didn't look right. His face looked looked defeated.
This isn't Justin Fields, who had a toe injury and is going to be back tomorrow, even though it maybe didn't look the greatest. With MJ, I just feel so bad for him. And I'm going to get your guys' breakdown and where the Browns go from here. But I feel awful for him because I really think he was so much better than he was last year in so many ways. And like, he's one of these players that you just had to assume was going to, not only because it's a contract year, but just because he wasn't what he was last year. But so many parts of this defense weren't what they were last year either.
Well, you know that here the offense caused a lot of that. People, because when you're a defense and you know you got to pitch a shutout, it's hard to do that, right? And sometimes you try to do things you're out of character.
I mean, they only had four picks all last year, though. Like Coach Riz, that's impossible as a football team to only have four interceptions all season.
Well, for me, that comes down you got to do more on first down because if you can win on first down, you're creating those exotic looks that creates pass pressure that you can do some things with coverage. Quarterback's got to get rid of the ball. For me, it's all about with these guys. Being on a struggle, they got to win first down because then you can do what you do. That's what you're best at. You're best at rushing the passer and covering. But if they don't win on first down and that offense coordinator gets to dictate, that's where they can struggle a little bit. They got to sell out on first down, win on first down, then they got a chance.
All right, so you two, I love you two because you guys are two of the very best, I believe, when it comes to like the nits and the grits and like breaking things down and like knowing what you're talking about when you go through this. So we'll give it to both of you, but we'll start with you, Coach Riz. What happens if MJ Emerson, if this injury is significant? Is it just going to be Cam Mitchell that steps up? What does this look like for the Browns without him? I assume Newsom, then obviously we get to actually play the outside, which he seems like he really wants to do and has been vocal about in the past couple years as well.
Well, two things I immediately looked to try to, like, trying to get back on track is always hard, but who was the first guy in? Newsom went outside, and Hickman went to the nickel, which tells me now Hickman looks a little bit thicker this year. That looks like a spot he can play. And when you're at the nickel, you got run fits. You got C&D run fits, so you got to make sure you can do that. I'm not sure if he can. Who knows? Obviously, that'll come with pads, and that'll come with scrimmages. But that was the first thing in was he went to that nickel, and then Newsom went outside where he likes. And I think Cam Mitchell will be a part of that because I still think they want to have Newsom inside, who's doing a great job inside. And once again, in Schwartz's scheme, that C&D, you're a backer, and you gotta if you're gonna be in that nickel, you're a backer, and you gotta make sure you can stop the run.
Yeah, Greg Newsom alluded to that. When you are a nickelback, like it ain't Madden. You just don't get the line up on a tight end or get it back out of the backfield. No, they're gonna put you in conflict, and they're gonna say, hey, listen, let's see if we can run that outside zone and see if they can come up and be a solid force player. So. That's intriguing because I did not see, them moving him from safety down into Ronnie Hickman moving from safety down to the nickel position because technically that's, you got receivers. You got a third receiver sometimes that you're going to cover too. So we're going to see how that works out and who rolls in with the safeties. I'll be interested to see who's those next wave of safeties, right? They brought in a bunch of people. But if Hickman is going to be your next guy up, who's the next guy in secondary in safety room?
Well, the guy I like is Kazee because he's been pretty good. But that guy, you're right, that guy who plays deep in Delpit, I love Delpit down in the box. But that guy who plays deep, he's got to create some turnovers. But that creating those turnovers, like we said, that starts with pressure. And they got to win on first down. Then all of a sudden you win because now you're in wide threes, you're in wide fives. You can move your ends down inside. As you know, you can create some issues because you know they got to pass. Yeah. Now, if you lose on first down and you go nickel, like G. Bush is saying, now they're going to say, all right, you're going to go nickel on second and five. We're going to run out zone right at you, and we're going to make you tackle. We're going to have our 270-pound tight end chip off on you, see if you can handle that. So they got to win on first down, but, I think Kazee's the guy. Jenkins they brought over. There's some guys that they have, but those guys got to create turnovers, right? Like you were saying, only four last year. But that starts those turnovers, and this defense, in my opinion, starts with winning on first and creating pressure with those guys up front.
All right, Coach, let me ask you, I need the quarterback breakdown. We'll start with Dylan Gabriel, and then we can make our way to Shador and Joe Flacco. Go ahead.
I thought Dylan had a pretty good day. I thought Dylan did pretty well days one through three. He really struggled on Saturday. He struggled mightily on Saturday. And everybody's concerns, I was a little bit higher on Dylan than most coming out, and I still am very high on him. But the concerns people have are legit, right? Now, what I saw today, if he's going to be successful, I liked it because they're moving the pocket for him. He's not a guy who can throw from a gap every time.
Okay. The interception didn't worry you.
No, because that was they were doing situational stuff. That was a four.
Okay.
Now, the only thing I thought he should have done, it was just four verts. That was fourth down, no time on the clock. Mm. So he should have given it. My thing, I wrote in my notes, he should have been a little bit of air, because we always told our guys, let your guy catch it or tip it, right? So almost like a Hail Mary play. So I don't think he didn't give anybody enough chance to, like, go get it if needed.
I like what you just said right there, because you gave context to it, because a lot of times people will just see the highlights and say, oh, he threw an interception. But the context is the drill is set up for a certain way to get a certain outcome to put you in different positions. And look, it's fourth down, no time left on the clock. So that gives people context as to why he threw it there or where he threw it. And so it's just not, hey, he just threw an interception. I think that's important. That's some of the stuff you see if you kind of practice and you're involved in it.
Well, you know, and that's the thing. So if I'm telling him, I'm saying, it's fourth down. That's it. Like, you got to have your guys, they had all the big guys in there. Throw it where our guy, Najoe, can get it, or he's going to tip it, right? It's got to be like almost a Hail Mary. So that would be my only takeaway on that. But it is, when you look at all these throwing numbers from a practice and stuff, for me, they're way overvalued. Because the situational stuff, sometimes they're doing 2 minutes, sometimes they're bringing pressure, sometimes there's no pass protection, sometimes there's great pass protection, you get a bad route. So there's so many contexts that go in, this guy throws this many touchdowns, but they were in red zone, all the balls were from the 3-yard line in, kind of deal. So a lot of context. Going back to it, I thought Dylan did a pretty good job today because they moved the pocket. They're going to have to move the pocket for him. They're going to have to use launch points. But I tell everybody, I see why Kevin likes him, because he's pretty good on the run. He can throw that levels concept off the boot. He's a quick decision maker when they get in that empty out of 12 personnel, when they get big and they're trying to find matchups if you can get regular personnel. So you see why he likes him. The concerns, even though I'm higher on him than most, the concerns are real. He's got to be able to, create lanes and move the pocket. He can't be a pocket guy. I truly don't believe, because for me, his height, as much as it is seeing, when you're in that 200-pound range with these guys, can you be available? Can you survive these hits by these big guys? So I thought he's been solid. Once again, I think there's, moving forward, you need more live periods with these guys. So, they're getting way too much criticism, way too much praise right now.
All right, what about Shador? What did you see today? By all accounts, it didn't seem like it was the best day that we've seen from Shador.
No, they kind of switched yesterday. So Dylan was very average yesterday, and I thought Shador had his best end of session. He's always shown flashes, and then he'll have two things I noticed. One is when his footwork isn't right, he's not an elite arm talent guy. Mm-hmm. So he's got to be able to make sure he's transferring his weight from his right side to his left side, especially when he doesn't have to. Now, I tell everybody, why would he have bad habits? Because he didn't have any pass protection. So he's learned how to create time for himself, knowing where pressure comes. I've heard a lot on this channel, people calling in saying, hey, he doesn't know what he's doing. He knows exactly what he's doing, but he's created bad habits because no run game and not having great pass protection.
Yeah.
Today he struggled, and reason why is because his footwork, in my opinion, wasn't very good, especially in that last session. When you're going 2 minute, right, the clock always speeds up, right? So sometimes your fundamentals go away because you're like, everything is happening with under 12 seconds because you got to get plays off. So that's what I saw with him today, which is one of Dylan's strengths, playing 6 years of football, right? He's been in a little bit more, and that's just reps, I think, in my opinion.
Do you think that's why, from a coaching standpoint, you can see sometimes, he doesn't have the tightest spiral on the football? Is that mechanics, or is that just a natural way that it comes off Shador's hand? Sometimes it's a little – if you watch Dylan Gabriel, he's throwing out. It's on the line. It's there. Do you think that could be a thing with Shador, is just sometimes the footwork and the mechanics are a little off kilter, and if he works on that, it'll come out a little better in certain circumstances?
Yeah, you have so many times you hear, quarterback's got to be a throw-off platform, and that happens, but there's only very few quarterbacks that can do that successfully, consistently, right? Put Mahomes, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson. You have to, for the most part, and that's what Dylan does. Dylan's very polished. So when he's throwing that stuff, he's using his whole body. He's transferring from the right side to the left side. He's torquing those hips, all those things we talk about as a coach. He's doing all those things, fundamentally. So when Shador is throwing off his back foot, two things happen. One is he doesn't create great velocity on the ball, could affect this spiral. Mm-hmm. And secondly, he's late. Because having your weight back and have to transfer it forward without being balanced in the NFL, that's a pick. you know, that split milliseconds a pick in the NFL, and that's kind of what you're seeing for me trying to watch every throw that he has and watching every throw in college. When he's fundamentally right, he's really good.
All right, give us one other camp nugget from today. Anybody that shined, anybody that looked really, really good, or even go the other direction, somebody that disappointed.
Well, Deontay Johnson has had a really nice couple of days.
Another good day for him today?
Another good day for him.
That's good. Okay. Yeah, he's been, I feel like he's been the camp star right now.
But I will say that the receivers as a whole, very questioned group. I think they've been competing very well. Now, can they compete at the NFL level? Obviously, that happens in live action. But I think practice-wise, I thought Jamari Thrash had a pretty good day to catch some chunk plays, 12 to 15 yards. The offensive line is a little bit of a concern. However, when pads go on, I always tell people, give the offensive lineman a little bit of a break, because when you don't have pads on, it's hard to pass protect.
I can't get sneaky.
Yeah, you can't do it. And it's just so it's tough. And this defensive line makes it tough because they're not a two-gap team. They're common. So if you're thinking as an offensive lineman, you're run by these guys. So I would say the receiver group. I would say for me, it's just who's going to be the next guard up. I've seen some rotation in there with Zinter and Thomas. And, you know, can they get back to that physical mentality? They've run the ball okay, but they have not moved vertically people in those double teams, what they want to do on that inside zone and gap schemes.
You know, that's a real cool thing. I just talked to Jonathan about this. I don't know. That's the biggest question mark. Can you go from what they did last year to let's recreate what we did in 2020, where we got Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt, and we're downhill, and you see the, you know, I call it to buy one, get one free. Wyatt Teller is moving people off the ball and getting out and wiping guys out, but Tonio is in his prime. I don't know. Because it takes time to ramp up to that. They have to be physical, and that takes a toll on your offensive line. So is that something that we should be expecting to come as the season goes along, or is that something we should see since day one? If that's going to be their identity.
Well, the energy down there with Bloomgren's been a lot different, right? So Bloomgren comes from, you know, Callahan with the Jets, and you see, for me, Bloomgren, like Callahan, always is the why, right? So they're just not doing aimless drills where they're blocking the guy in front of them. Bloomgren is giving them a picture saying, all right, you're going to block this three technique outside eye, but knowing that Mike's going to come A. So he's not only doing drills, but he's telling them the why, which I think is so important. Now, you're right. How much physicality can you have? Because you can't say you're physical. You have to go out and practice physical, and that takes a wear and tear on your body. But I see it in practice. I see the drills very Callahan-like right now in terms of how they're the energy, no rest, get going, lots of passion, sense of urgency, attention to detail, where your hands are, where your feet are. And he gets after them. You know, I always tell people two most important coaches are – your O-line coach and your strength coach. And I think Bloomer's going to do a great job.
No question. Coach Riz, we appreciate you stopping by, and we'll catch up with you, obviously, throughout the rest of training camp. But you'll be with me before every game. I think it's 3 hours before every game, and we'll have a lot of fun.
You're in good hands. He knows the stuff.
I know.
You're in good hands.
That's why we brought him on board. I was like, this is the guy. We need him. Get him in immediately, and here we are. Thanks, Coach.
I appreciate it, guys.
All right, good stuff with Coach Riz right there. More with G. Bush and myself. We're going to go into a Shador Sanders conversation. The Browns being forced to take Shador seriously. It's afternoon drive right here on the Fan. Jonathan Peterlin, Garrett Bush with you guys. We are in Berea. We are at the practice right now, and we do have an update in regards to the latest on Browns cornerback MJ Emerson. Obviously, you just heard, because we were just talking with Coach Riz. He's like, geez, doesn't sound good, seem good.
Yeah.
And we got the update, Mike Garofolo, among others. But Garofolo reporting to him and Rap Sheet, MJ Emerson suffered what is believed to be an Achilles injury today. He's going to undergo imaging to determine the full extent of the injury. The expectation, though, is that it's a significant tear, G. Bush. So an Achilles injury, expectation, significant tear. If we know anything about Achilles injuries and significant tears, that would presume the season would be over for MJ Emerson, I would imagine.
Yeah, that's all she wrote. That's it. I mean, that's a doggone shame.
Contract year, 24 years old. Yeah. Awesome player a couple years ago. Had the setback last year where it wasn't as good. But this is devastating. There's no other way to put it. This is devastating news for the Browns.
You lose your starting corner. You lose your – see, this is – this is tough, man. You know, this is why we kind of talk about this thing with football, because it's so unpredictable. Just think about the things that have happened so far. You saw Kenny Pickett. He you know, goes out with the hamstring earlier in camp. It's Quinshon Judkins, right?
Yeah.
These are all guys that figure to be in the rotation for either starting or major contributors, and then now you lose – presumably, we'll wait to see what comes out, but the news doesn't look good. Your starting
cornerback, and if anything is going to happen with this team, it's going to happen defensively. They have to lead. They were going to have to lead defensively.
That's a good point.
And now you have to rotate. You go – and actually, to be honest with you, I thought that that was one of the positions of strength for the team. Grant Delpit.
Oh, it should be. I mean, if you think
Denzel
about it. Denzel Ward's one of the best corners in the game. ESPN executives ranked him as number three. MJ Emerson, when he's playing like he was 2 years ago instead of last year, is a legitimate number one on most teams in the sport. And, I mean, Greg Newsom is so good at his job. But he's been in a position where he hasn't really been able to thrive in what he typically would be best in. That's a former first-round pick that was shoved to the inside. We know he can play the outside. Like, yeah, there's a lot there.
Yeah, there is. And so that's why as we move around things and we kind of started the show talking about this, look, we haven't been in an inter-squad scrimmage practice. We haven't been with these other teams in Philadelphia and the Panthers. We have not done that. So we haven't gotten any preseason games. So, you know, a lot of people are saying first team reps and who's playing with this person and where they're moving. Guys, we haven't even got to the tackling part of this thing, and we got guys, major guys, for whatever reason, not on the field.
Well, so you highlighted the big three, and so I want to go through that because when you talk about it, I thought the Browns, if they were going to win in any sort of way this year, and I don't know what your expectations were for this season, but no one had it at extremely high measures. I mean, Vegas has this as 5.5 wins, so like, we'll do this with a grain of salt. But if they were going to win, I thought it was going to be in a very Steelers-esque way. Run the ball a ton and play exceptional defense. Yep. That's what they had to do. And now you fast forward, and you mentioned Judkins is gone for an amount of games we don't quite yet know, but that takes a big hit to the running game. Kenny Pickett was going to be part of the plan if you didn't want to have the ball turned over ton, which, again, part of the Steelers' plan of winning, basically game managing with your quarterbacks, not turning the ball over, running the ball big. And then on the defensive side of the ball, you lose JOK for his career, which is devastating. The only Pro Bowler that Andrew Berry has ever selected, he's gone forever. And then you mix it with the idea that what is one of the best pieces of this defense, one of the more promising pieces of the defense, and MJ Emerson is gone as well. And all of a sudden, that defense that looked very, very healthy and could compete to be one of the best defenses in all the NFL and was going to be the recipe in how you win games, it's taken two really big hits relative to when we were talking about it, let's say even 3, 4, 5 months ago.
Yeah, listen, and a lot of rookies and young guys, let's talk about it on the defensive end of the spectrum. Devin Bush, we're figuring out what's going on with him.
Another good point.
Another outside linebacker. Then Mike Hall, he's still on the pup list.
Well, we just have guys just, you know, retiring in the middle of very beginning of camp.
We forgot all about that.
Like, what is going on?
Jordan's
here?
Jordan Nixon's
like, I'm done.
I'm cool. Yeah, like I stayed home. This family life is kind of cool.
We're the green dot, but I guess I'm just I showed up for 2 days and decided I didn't want to do this anymore.
So now you look around. You got Carson Schwechter, rookie.
Who looks good by all accounts, but he's just that. He's a rookie.
Hey, they might as well give him the captain in.
Mason Graham and him might end up getting it. I don't know.
So now you talk about Mason Graham in the top five.
The defensive line will still be great.
Yes.
Right? Like, we know that. They're going to be great. I think so highly of Isaiah McGuire and Alex Wright, and I love where that competition's going to go. But Myles Garrett and Mason Graham and, I don't know, two sacks of potatoes are going to be able to get the job done. That's just they're so good, they're going to be able to get the job done. But then where do we go from here? You got Denzel still. That's great.
That's awesome.
But you see the hits that we've been taking now.
But you know Denzel, he get 4 games off every year.
He played 16 last year, but you're right. You're right in that every year outside of last season, the man just he's playing 12 or 13 games.
He's going to get 12 or 13, and it's just
That's his M.O.?
So now
what a good vacation plan Denzel's working on there. I don't know.
It's beautiful, man.
How do we get that?
So you couple that with you want to play complimentary football, right?
Yeah.
You want to run the ball. Well, a big part of your running game is, all right, Quinshon Judkins was going to be that guy.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're like, okay, well, are we going to be able to do that with Jerome Ford? Can we run that same side with Dylan Sampson? They're getting guys already, signing guys from the UFL to, come take some hits.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, we watched Schwechter basically knock Dylan Sampson into the next week after that.
Sideways. I said, anytime your legs are above your head.
I think he ended up where the new stadium's going to be built.
When your legs and your body is going two different ways or your leg is above your waist, that's never good.
Never good.
It's never good. You can't get hit like that. That is not a good look, bro. I said, so they thinking about it. So, and by the way, the third part of this component is, if you're going to want to play smart complementary football and you're going to go and you're going to try to beat the Patriots or the Steelers or the Ravens or somebody like that, you kind of got to have special teams.
Yeah.
And special teams really ain't our thing besides punting. What are we looking like?
Yeah, Bohorquez is still great.
He's great, but when it comes to getting points,
I mean, our kicker is very problematic, all things considered. If he was on any other team last year, he would have been cut. But they paid him money, and they're like, all right, we paid you money, and we're not going to be very competitive this year. You know, here's the part that stinks, though. This is what bothers me just a little bit. If this was a projected 11-win team, do you know the chaos that would be around this MJ Emerson conversation right now?
Crazy.
Like, we're talking about it, and it matters, and it matters in such a big-time way. If this was an 11- or a 12-win team, we would have full phone lines on this.
Yes.
People would be panicking in the streets. The news around, like, everywhere you turn, people would still be like, did you hear about MJ Emerson? You see about MJ Emerson?
Man,
now, because we're projected to win 6 games potentially this year, people are like, oh, yeah, that's unfortunate. Yeah, the defense isn't really going to be anything good anyway, right? Like, and it just kind of stinks. Like, these are the conversations that you get robbed of when the expectations aren't very high, because this is a massive hit to this defense.
Now, when you talk about expectations, Jonathan, they go hand in hand with the quarterback. And so, as you see, and people are moving out left and right, I think that the conversation starts to shift with, it's going to be very difficult for the organization not to do everything possible to get a look at these young quarterbacks, because at some point there's no reason to be trotting any old school veterans. And listen, I love what Joe Flacco did a couple of years ago, but let's not forget what happened at the end of that saga.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and when you come up with more and more injuries, you can't even lie to the locker room at that point, can you?
Yeah, like, come on, MJ.
Like, the idea of Joe Flacco is we're trying to get wins so the locker room doesn't lose their enthusiasm and everything associated with it. Well, I mean, the locker room's not—they're not idiots.
I mean, they just was kneeling a second ago. They saw what that. I mean. To understand, that is one of the best players that they have on their team, and that player is not going to be with them. So, obviously, the one thing that you can get is the excitement level. And sometimes you get excitement from other places. Joe Flacco provided it when he came off the couch, mm-hmm. and provided that spark, and it turned into a special season. You can get that with a young quarterback that you don't expect to be somebody.
All right, let's ask you guys, and I want to get G. Bush's thoughts on this. I'm gonna surprise you with a little something. But 216-474-0092. I have a Shedeur Sanders theory that I want to roll past G. But are the Browns going to be forced to take Shedeur seriously? You keep getting these injuries, and maybe they do say, "All right, fine. We're just so injury ravaged. Let's throw the young guys out there. Let's see exactly what they can do." It's Jonathan Peterlin and G. Bush Afternoon Drive with you guys right here on the Fan. MJ Emerson, in case you're just joining us, he is. Well, he got injured today. He went down. The expectation is it's an Achilles injury. Mike Garofolo and the NFL Network reporting they expect it to be an extensive tear. G. Bush, we know a lot about Achilles injuries at this point. It's just not a good. It's not a good thing. It's bad news for the Browns. And there's really no other way of looking at it. Now we are just a couple camps in, and Kenny Pickett has his injury. Obviously, have the injury here with MJ Emerson, and we've kind of been going through just the losses, and it's adding up for this Browns team.
Yeah. And we're not, we're not to the bulk of what training camp is. And we talked about it earlier. We kind of said, you know, listen, what is the unintended consequences of being more physical, being more contact, being more.
Yeah, so I wonder if I should almost strike that from the record, though, because like earlier in the show, I went back to the idea that Camp Cupcake is what it is, and they wanted to go away from that, so they got more physical and they got more intense. But like, shouldn't I have to reel that back in now that we know it's a non-contact injury?
Nope.
And the same thing with, no, we don't have to?
Nope. No, you stand on that. Because here's the thing.
Okay, because I want to reel it back in.
The crazy thing about it is those are going to automatically happen. You're going to have the soft tissue stuff and the non-contact freak injury.
Oh, so now we're coupling it all together.
It's
so the non-contact ones have already happened, but because you're physical, you're guaranteed to get X amount more than you typically would. And you don't have the leeway. Okay, all right.
You talked
me back into my take. Yeah, you talked me back into my take. You're right.
I'm more scared now because at least these are uncontrollable.
You know, an actual contact injury is going to happen.
Yeah,
it's the NFL.
Happening.
This is how this goes. But you can't afford to have one to another, especially a defensive player right now. You can't afford that right now.
And think about it. The biggest one, I'm not even worried about broken arms and broken elbows and broken bones. These guys, that don't really happen. The thing you're scared about is the non-contact injuries and the concussions.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Because think about it. You got a clear protocol. Think about it. Like, during the season, you got to have some – you have to be able to run in the heat and not get a headache for, like, 5 days in a row. Now, listen, I don't tackle nobody. I'm just big and overweight. I can't run nowhere for 5 days in a row in the heat and not have no headache. What you talking about? I'm gonna be on protocol permanently.
I have a headache and I've just been out in the sun for
right
3 hours.
I'm just looking around like, yeah.
I'm like, so, it's hot out here.
So think about that. Like, we haven't had any concussions, any of those things. And when you talk about the quarterback position, I mean, we ain't talking about the sore arm, the sore elbows.
Yeah.
My finger hit a helmet at practice against the Eagles. So an offensive lineman stepped on my foot. Like, these are just all – that's running the mill. And you got three starters down that you were counting on heavily right now. And you mentioned the fourth, and JOK just being like, that hurts because you just wiped him off the board. That's like a Clause A injury at the getting in trouble at the deadline.
Yeah.
They were like, yeah, you're on maternity leave or something to the 31st.
It's not maternity leave.
Like, that's crazy. Like,
have a kid.
So you just done until after the you're done until after the trading deadline.
Let me give you my Shador Sanders thing that's going to bother me, okay? Because you're part of the Shador hive. You're part of the people that love Shador the way that I love Shador, and I appreciate that. By the way, I do feel like I don't know. Can we? Is it like a game recognizing game type moment? Can we? Can we acknowledge the fact that I was very in on Shador very early on?
You talked about this years ago. This, I think I was still doing Saturday shows. You was like, let me get the two. I need the jersey. You said, let me get on the jersey quick.
So here's what's going to bother me about the Shador Sanders convo, and I want to know if it'll bother you the same way. And just pay attention to it, and I just want you to monitor it. When you monitor, you can think back to the conversation you have with me right now and go, JP was on this one a little bit early, but I think it's going to be what materializes. I believe that Stefanski is getting ready to go ahead and watch Shador Sanders get better and better, and he's getting ready to go ahead and give him more and more credit, and he's going to go ahead, and here's how this changes, okay? Instead of just saying Shador Sanders is good at football and that's why he's coming here, I can see where the conversation's going. It's going to start with, well, Shador got here because they did it the right way with him. Shador got here because he started with the threes when he wasn't ready for it, and then they moved him to the twos, and he wasn't ready for the ones yet, and they held him back. They didn't throw him into the fire and get rid of his confidence or anything like that, and they let him just kind of come along, and they treated him like he was an actual fifth-round pick, and then, oh my gosh, wow, look at the job that Kevin Stefanski has done with this guy. Now he's a legitimate NFL quarterback, and it's because of how they treated him early on and not throwing him into the fire, and it's going to get me enraged that this is going to be the conversation. All the credit that should go to Shador for being a good quarterback, because he was going to thrive if he's with the threes, the twos, the ones, it doesn't matter, is going to instead go to the Browns' process of this all, when their process wasn't anything but thinking that Shador Sanders was just a fifth-round pick.
I commend you. That right there is G. Bush level mastermind weaving behind the scenes thought head cannon.
It's a lot of thinking involved there.
It's a lot of thinking.
It's easy to follow, but it's a lot of thinking.
But here's the thing. That's why I always argued. I said, bro, the best thing for you to do is for him to be great. Because if he is, what are you going to be able to do? If he is.
Well, they're going to take credit for it.
They're going to
tell you, this is our Sam Darnold. We did this, and it's our processes, and it's our way of thinking that got him here. And weren't we geniuses for treating him like a fifth-round quarterback when he really was nowhere close to being a fifth-round quarterback when the talent level actually exists?
It erases. This is how powerful a quarterback chip is on the board. It erases all of the stuff that we saw prior to that, and it gives you some sort of amnesia. The Cincinnati Bengals are no better organization than they were before Joe Burrow.
It's a good point. Yeah, they're still a bad situation.
They still do bad stuff.
Bad ownership. Don't pay their players.
It creeps up every once in a while.
Bad coach with Zach Taylor.
Right. Joe Burrow is like Pepto-Bismol. When that acid reflux starts to getting up, Joe Burrow just steps in and says, I'm Joe Burrow.
So I used to call Russell Wilson human concealer.
Yeah. Yep. That's
same,
it.
Same type of thing.
Same thing.
They cover up a lot of mistakes and a lot of problems. And I could see as Shador is showcasing his talents here in training camp, you can start to see some of it, and you can see where the credit isn't going. It's not going to Shador. No. It's going to Stefanski and company for, doing it the right way. Oh,
he won't get that. He won't get that. And this is the projection. Even if he is a fifth-round pick and he does become, and like you said, I want to weigh in, you said it. I mean, that's not the likelihood. That's not like a 95% chance. There's a lot of things that need to go right for you when you're a fifth-round pick.
Sure. Yeah.
Especially when they drafted a quarterback in the third. You got to have some things happen when you get the opportunity. And then when you get the opportunity, you got to not only perform, you have to overperform. Like, he can't be, even if he gets his opportunity, he's not going to have a team around him that's going to be, let's just get 196, one touchdown, no interceptions, and that's going to be it. Deshaun Watson proved that wasn't going to work.
Yeah.
With better roster. So he's going to have the numbers that is plain as sight so people can get aboard. But if he does it, the first year, it's going to go to the process. They're going to say, we're going to give Andrew Berry credit because he had the guts to keep taking quarterbacks until he found one. They're going to say Kevin Stefanski developed them the right way. Look how great they did it.
That's the one I'm concerned about.
He's not going to get credit until he does it year two years in a row, where he has some autonomy, some different things, some cachet. So, yes, sometimes he's going to.
But Stefanski's already perceived differently is the difference, right? Like, yes. Zach Taylor and Joe Burrow, we can call Zach Taylor a knob and everything else, and it's simple. It's like, well, we never thought anything prior of Zach Taylor, and so he just continued that.
Right.
Stefanski, people want to give him credit nationally. They want to fawn over him. They want to be like, he's the reason why. They give him Kyle Shanahan respect when he hasn't accomplished anything close to what Kyle Shanahan has.
I loved we having this conversation. Because I bring up Kyle Shanahan all the time. Let's look at compare the two. Kyle Shanahan took Jimmy Garoppolo to the Super Bowl.
Right.
If anybody takes the
Super Bowl and multiple NFC title games.
If anybody did that, any quarterback did that for the Browns, he has a lifetime contract.
Mm-hmm.
We're never getting rid of him.
You mean Garoppolo?
Yes. Okay. We would have kept him till the wheels fell off. Not only did Shanahan say, nah, that's not it. He ponied up and got Trey Lance, right?
And there was trust in Shanahan that he could do it again is the difference.
And
he did.
And he got Trey Lance.
And he got Brock Purdy. He did.
And then he had enough cachet to go tell the owner, hey, listen, I know I used up a lot of your draft capital.
Yeah, we swung and missed there.
Yeah, I swung and missed on that one. This Trey Lance thing, we got to get him up out of here. But that seventh round guy, Mr. Irrelevant, I think I can see something. They said, okay, no problem, Kyle. Mm-hmm. And he turned that dude into
the owner, or is that
no problem, dog. Whatever you want to. Hey, just get the credit card from out the purse.
It sounds like you with Rosie. Now.
Yeah, that's the. Well,
just get the credit card.
That's the two.
We'll sort it
family.
Out later.
Yeah. Listen, it's two people talk about why can't you go on vacation? Hey, listen, if both of y'all ain't got no jobs, we ain't going on vacation. Two incomes.
Well, then you're a dink, right? Yeah. The dual income, no kids.
Yeah, that.
Those guys are loaded.
Those people. People just be doing stuff, and they look at you like, hey, so Peterlin, you want to go out to eat? It's not that you don't got it. It's like, dude, it's Tuesday. My daughter is causing havoc right now. No. Like, we're just trying to figure right things now. Out the crib. Tuesday at the house. But you are correct. They give Stefanski because he's the prototypical, if you say new age coach, he got everything. Like, he has coach speak down to a T. He's Ivy League educated.
Yeah.
He looks like an Abercrombie and Fitch, middle age.
Well, that's extensive. I don't know if he's got that one.
But listen, ask the middle
age. Fine-looking guy, but I don't know about Abercrombie.
But I was going to say the
– You know, I worked at Abercrombie in college.
Oh, really?
For, like, 3 months. It was the worst job I've ever had.
I
was, like, folding jeans and telling people that walked in what they should buy their kids.
Wow.
It was awful. A fun fact about me, I bet you didn't know.
I did not
know. Yeah, it was not good. I don't speak about it often.
Did you have a hemp bracelet? Did they make you wear one?
I had one around my neck. Yes, I did. And I also used that cologne in the shop all day.
Hey,
I just smelled like an Abercrombie store 24/7.
That Abercrombie store, if it's across from like the sand pretzels
yeah.
or whatever, you
the
smell that.
Yeah.
You smell that the Abercrombie. You're like, ah, we're close to Abercrombie and Fitch. They store be smelling it, and it, and it's quite dark in there too.
It is. All right, but they wanted to help him out is the point, and I feel like he is only going to benefit if Shador keeps putting up days like he did yesterday. We'll get into more about what Shador did today, what Jimmy Haslam said as well. Chris Jimenez joining us at 5:40. The Lead coming your way next, right here on the Fan.